Can we start it?
What?
Can we start?
We can start, yeah. Welcome back to the Four Idle Hands podcast. Welcome back, Terry.
Hi, welcome, Michael. I'm not sure what's tickling your whistle today, right? But
I don't know. I think it was just the thought of trying to get through an episode of this without mentioning either the Super Bowl or Taylor Swift. And look, I've done it already. You've made me do it.
Well, the Super Bowl this year was watched by more people than watched the first moon landing in America. America, this was.
Right. Well, I wasn't one of them. How many was it?
I didn't give a number, actually, but it was more than that. So, I mean, and basically, somebody had a camera on Tay-Tay the whole time. So,
yeah. Sounds like fake news to me. Fake news.
That's not going
and the moon landing obviously never happened either.
That's true. Well, just, and again, we're not talking about the score, but Taylor was very happy because her boyfriend won. So that was fine.
Yeah, well, look, I'm delighted for them. It's just fantastic news, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Anyway, less of that. And you were a complete idiot, obviously, and stayed up for the whole bloody thing.
Yep. Absolutely. 4 a.m. finish. Wonderful.
Yeah. On to more interesting things, Terry. We've not got a guest this week, so we're going to just blabber for the next week. While you've been to a couple of gigs, you've been to see Depeche Mode on the 1975. We've got a special on recent Irish albums. We're going to cover New Dad, Sprints, and Problem Patterns, and Connor or Crohur White as well. Terry's also been to the sort of launch of the Glasgow Film Festival, and we'll have some Six Nations chat as well. So let's start with that, Terry. Let's start with the rugby. We've had the first two rounds of the Six Nations, and there's one horse has galloped way ahead of the rest of this stage already.
I think it's, I don't mean, I mean, obviously I went to the Scotland France game on Saturday, and it was a great atmosphere. Six Nations is always a good atmosphere. There's loads of French come to Edinburgh. I mean, I guess the attraction is just the city as opposed to the rugby. I think they love Scotland, I think, be fair to say. But the rugby wasn't great. And you're right, I think of all the six teams, I think Ireland played the most consistent rugby over the two games, and certainly at the weekend. And Scotland conspired to lose the game themselves, regardless of that decision at the end. So, yeah, I think they've all been pretty
brilliant. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a World Cup hangover for a lot of these teams. And yet, we've got England play 2-1-2. It's, you know, how do they keep on doing it?
Well, I watched the 15-minute highlights of the England game on that Six Nations show, and they had, at one point, they had 13 players. And I know how much you love the Welsh. I can only imagine it's because Wales were just not good enough to take control of it, because they should have beaten England. They really should have done, like, so. And England should have been beaten by Italy the week before as well. But, I mean, they just seem to get through it. And, of course, now they'll be cocky. And I think it's the next game. It's the next game, England-Ireland? For Ireland?
I think it is England-Ireland. It's Ireland-Wales, I think.
Yeah, and then it's England. They play England at Twickenham. But, yes. Yeah, pretty dreadful. I mean, the Scotland game, yeah, so I went to that. For some reason, my tickets always seem to are always in the middle of the away fans. So the French guys won the singing battle, that's for sure. And they won the match finally as well. But yeah, Scotland were dreadful. And this kicking rule they've got now, where Ben Russell stands there, picks his nose, and then kicks it back. That's ridiculous. I mean, they need to change.
It really was farcical, wasn't it? France didn't inspire much confidence either, Terry, did they? I mean, you know, they're not a one-man team. You know, DuPont's absence obviously impacts on them, but there was a lack of leadership there behind the scrum, wasn't there?
No, I think the only player I kind of watching at the weekend, the guy Antonio got the yellow card, he was off. Gael Ficou was the man of the match. I think he was, actually. Maybe he wasn't.
He
scored and was good. Peno was all right, and the rest of them I thought were just entirely average. I think Scotland. I mean, Russell. I mean, the folk. Hopefully, someone listens to this who sits near me. But the folk around me love Finn Russell, and but the people. Yeah, he was. I thought he was dreadful. And then if you watched the highlights and you watched the bits where he missed the pass, where he could have passed at the end, but way before he got that try, no try. And Scotland could have walked it in, and he just didn't look.
I was in the car listening to the radio commentary, and at the very end, the summarizers did feel that Scotland had spaffed way too many chances to be relying on television match officials' take on whether it was a try or not. I mean, it is difficult for the television match official. I think he tried to get the referee to change his mind on whether that was a try or not. Didn't succeed to, but the conversation between the two of them went on for a good 5 minutes, and there was quite a lot of to and fro. And I think they should go back to try or no try, and just make it more simple.
One of the guys along our seats had the ref cam, the ref mic thing in his ear, and he was sort of relaying the conversation. He said, "Oh, apparently the TMO said the ball was on the ground." And of course, when you hear the replay back afterwards, I mean, it's the first time I've really seen that such a mess before in that TMO thing. And apparently, it was a technicality, really, that the ball, he just couldn't prove it, therefore it didn't happen, but clearly did happen.
You couldn't actually see the ball touching the grass. What was the problem? Although the top of the ball looked at like it was in a position where it would have to be in contact with the grass.
Why, so you wonder why you don't put put a chip in the ball somehow, then and a line, or I mean, that must be technology they could do, surely.
I would think so. Yeah, I mean they've now got chips in the gum shields for players so that they can tell if they've been involved in a head collision.
I thought, yeah, so that was interesting. I was trying to see if you as a public person could see that data, but apparently it's not. It's only closed for the match officials, apparently, so.
Yeah, so Ireland steaming ahead, not playing brilliantly, but just pretty efficient, I would say, Terry. And there's probably better to come from this squad, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. I was kind of worried when I saw the sort of six players they changed out. O'Mahony was off, and but I think Casey did really well at scrum half. I think all the players, McCloskey did pretty well in the centre for Bundiaki, and it seemed pretty Finlay beat him. Well, pretty seamless, I thought, actually, which was good.
Yeah. And moving on to another aspect of the match day experience, there's an article in the Guardian today about something that would I think it's an affliction for pretty much every spectator sport now is the forced entertainment that fans are having to listen to in the slightest break and play between the games. So it's called Hitting the Wonderwall, Twickenham Struggles to Make Own Entertainment. And basically what the article is about is that, part of the pleasure of going to these games is chewing the fat with the people around you as to, how the game's going, what are we doing wrong, what are we doing well. And now it's very difficult to do it, especially for a lot of older people who can't hear that well, when they're getting electronic dance music blasted into their
Well,
ear holes for the whole of the half time break.
that's true. It's interesting because I think my first experience of this was probably some American sports, and I'm going to talk about basketball because it was the only one I've really seen a lot of live, where every time there's a break in play, they blast out tunes into the stadium, for 15 seconds. I think that's how, I hate to mention it, but that the guy who recorded Rock and Roll got his money was because he used that song all the time in the breaks. And they do that at Murrayfield. Well, they certainly do it everywhere, probably at Murrayfield. As soon as there's a break in play, they put on the tunes in the stadium. And there's an old guy behind me, and he was like, "Well, why do they do this? It seems absolutely pointless." I mean, they had a singer on beforehand who everybody just ignored. And they had a band on in the West Village, Fan Village, which was okay, but again, way too loud. But yeah, it is.
It's almost said that they can't contemplate the idea that a little bit of quiet actually works quite well in these passages of not non-play when the scrum has collapsed. I mean, it's just kind of it interferes on your personal space a bit, doesn't it?
I didn't particularly need it. I mean, the songs they always played, I mean, for me, Scotland, they always played The Captain, which was, Biffy Clyro's tune, but they kept playing that all the time. After a while, it wears a bit thin. But they even had, actually, interesting enough, in the, I mean, I guess it was part of the pre-match entertainment. They had this band playing the Lorettes, they were called. They were kind of like a sort of 60, more like the World War dance troupe singing songs. And then they had some interviews with some of the players that aren't in the squad. And that was funny, and I felt sorry for him because nobody paid attention to it.
Yeah.
Nobody was watching that at all. It was on, they had a big stage and they had a big screen with the big map. You could see it, and nobody was interested at all. But oddly, this is one thing about Murrayfield is that the Guinness tent was oddly quiet this time.
Right.
Got in and out several times without having to queue at all this time. So there we go.
Yeah. Oh, actually, one other thing as just made the connection in my head was the BBC had refused to cover the Scottish Curling Championships this year because of a piece of advertising by Hendrick's Gin. You got the aerial shot over the target on the curling rink. Well, the Hendrick's Gin logo, which had the word gin included in it, was put around the I suppose the target,
Right, right.
and was going to be seen in every single shot. Where the ball, the what is it? It's not puck, is it? What do you call the thing? The stone that comes to
Stone.
rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this contravened regulations when it comes to alcohol advertising on BBC, and therefore they can't cover it. And yet the Guinness logo was obviously to be seen on every single Six Nations
Yeah.
pitch and surrounds. But because they got the 0.0 after it, namely that
Oh,
it's alcohol free,
that's true.
they're perfectly okay to do that.
That's a bit, I mean, okay. Yeah, they do. You're right. They're really pushing the 0.0. So that does seem a bit, that's a bit odd, mind you. Yeah, but I don't know. I can't see the, why they do that. It is interesting because obviously, maybe come on to this later on, but the whole thing now is you've got to pay for your cup as well now. So when you get your four cups of Guinness, which I did, and because I always buy three for me, normal, and one for my wife, then the zero alcohol. You have to pay £1 for the cup. And then, of course, when you take the cup back, you get the next one. You can take the cup back at the very end to get cups pound back. And the funniest thing for me was we stayed to watch the England Wales game, which was on afterwards, and there was folk, probably maybe slightly younger folk, going around collecting up all the cups that had been dropped on the floor. And this guy had his arms as wide as you could think, put them doing his head, with full of cups. Because you take them back and you get £1 for each one,
Yeah,
which is great. So,
that's enterprise for you, Terry. That's he could
well,
do well in The Apprentice, that
it's so surprising that I came back with two plastic cups in my pockets because I'd changed, they had different cups this time than last time. So I thought I need to collect one of those. So I had two cups going
guy.
back. I guess it's environmentally friendly. It is quite nice to not, you're not throwing them away, I suppose.
Well, indeed, yeah. Okay, let's leave the sport behind for the moment and move on to music. So, well, let's start with the gigs you've been to recently, Terry. You've been over to Glasgow for a couple of biggies.
Yeah.
So, tell us about the 1975, first of all, another stadium tour for them.
Yeah, so that was good. I do, first of all, I do like the Hydro. I hadn't been to the Hydro for a while, so it's a pleasant surprise when you get in the Hydro because even for 1975 we were seated on the sort of first layer up, so we had good seats and you never feel you're very far away from the stage. The sound is very good in the Hydro, I think. I don't know if you've sounded that in the past, but I thought the sound was good. Getting in the Hydro was a pain in the arse. We got there just about on time. I would have thought the support act would be coming on, so we were a bit, which was the Japanese House, which is a basically one girl thing, but very much like a female version of 1975. And it took us a good 20 minutes to get in. We got to the door, and there was maybe 10 people in front of us, and it took us a good 15 20 minutes to get in. They were way too checking everything. They had, you know, metal detectors. The woman that asked me to take my pockets out, and I had receipts, and I had a hanky, and she's like, "What's in there?" Opened it up. It's like, ridiculous. So, but it was an interesting gig. The audience was a bit, probably, I don't know, it'd be fair to say 75% ladies, probably young girls for it. You can tell from the shouting and screaming, there's certainly a younger audience and a lot of ladies. I mean, it was a good show. They were good. I mean, the guy Healy, whether you like him or not,
I
he's now,
don't.
you don't, he's now grown a beard and moustache, so he looks a bit rougher. But he does put on a good, he's a good showman. The whole thing they had, the set was good. It was like a house with rooms that they, you know, he came on first and then the band came on. And as the band came on, they each turned a light on beside their position and pretty slick. And they used the stage well. The lighting was good. They had a second stage, which was right in front of us, which was quite good. Which he came out to, walked around the side. And the first time he went to it, it had a naked body lying on top of it, which was meant to be him, I guess. It was obviously a model, and he climbed up and sang around it, which is a bit odd. But there we go. And it was a good gig. I mean, it was kind of like two halves they did. They did the first bit was kind of probably their newer stuff, and then they had a slower section, which apparently is called Matt's Nightmare in the middle. I'm quite sure. And then they did a bit at the end, which is kind of the last 40 minutes was basically the sort of the bangers, the ones that sort of everybody knew. And the crowd were so passionate. There was like a couple in front of me, a guy and a girl who'd come dressed as Matt Healy. Basically, black suits, white ties, black tie, white shirt, and they were going mental for songs I didn't even know. It was funny. I mean, I chatted to the guy. He was really nice. He said, "Oh, I love this song, my favorite song." And so it was a good show. Whether you love him or hate him, he was quite engaging speaking to the crowd. Obviously, they were doing two nights. He loves Glasgow. So yeah, but decent, pretty good. I thought I did enjoy it.
Just an observation. I mean, you seem to have seen them quite a few times over the last couple of years. Are they're literally going from one tour to the next? I mean, has there been another album that they're doing for the first time with this tour, or is this
No,
the second time they've been out with it?
so this is the tour for the album Being Funny in a Foreign Language. I mean, the titles of their albums are ridiculous, by the way. I was looking them up the other day. So they did a tour last year called At Their Very Best, which they toured around the world and Europe. And then this one's called Still At Their Very Best. So the same album, essentially. They've got a big neon sign on the back of the stage, and they've added a still to the front of it, sort of thing, and changed the set list. And interesting enough, certainly this first album was the one I listened to first, and it's got a couple of songs on that, Chocolate, which you might have heard, but they've obviously dropped some of the original hits that got them on the radio in the first place, which must be difficult to do for bands, I guess, because everyone wants hits, expects the hits, and they didn't do certainly three songs that I thought they should have done, but good show, can't complain. I mean, my daughter and my son both went mental, so they enjoyed.
Well, maybe they also may have done that, bearing in mind that people would have seen them last year. So, to come out and play pretty much the same set would look
Maybe.
like a bit like taking your audience for granted a wee bit.
Yeah, maybe. And it was pretty standard, 2 hours. Support act was about half an hour. We saw the last couple of songs, and the Japanese house were very good. We came out, and I was going to go and I wanted to see their merch stand. So I went over to look at the merch. Catherine was like, my daughter is Catherine. She speaks her mind, and she was laughing. She said, "Oh, for God's sake, Dad, you're the only man in that queue." It was all young girls buying the necklace, which was 25 quid. That was the cheapest thing there was. And even the baseball caps were 35 quid. T-shirts were 40. Yeah, pretty expensive. So I actually bought a signed album by the support act, Japanese House, because I couldn't. I was trying to see if the 1975 had a 7-inch collection out recently that sold out. I thought they might have had that. They didn't. So, but yeah, they're all buying necklaces. I didn't buy a necklace.
That's reassuring, Carrie.
That's
That's
good.
reassuring. Right, so I mean, they're touring pretty much every year. Band that doesn't tour that often, who've come back to these shores, is Depeche Mode, and you've been to see them at the Hydro as well. So I'm
Yeah,
taking that was ticking a lot of boxes for you.
it was very good. I haven't seen them. I think the last time I saw them, I can't think if it was Belfast or Dublin actually, and it's a long time ago, probably. But yeah, they were great. I took my daughter. She'd never seen. She's not a big Depeche Mode fan, and she doesn't not like them. But I dragged her along. I mean, it was pricey. The tickets weren't cheap for that. Support act was Nadine Shah, who I recommend to go and see. She was great. Although a bit short in the support act. Six songs, I thought was a bit short. Full of energy, though. Crowds. Obviously, people were in to see her because it was pretty busy even when we got in. And she was great, actually. Really enjoyed some of her new stuff. And her new album, which is out quite soon. And some of her classic stuff as well. Very good. And then the main act came on, and they were, I say, fantastic, actually. A very different audience, by the way, for Depeche Mode. A bit older, well, a bit mixed actually, to be honest, but a
A bit more bold as well, probably.
little bit,
More
yeah. I mean,
gray.
I find it interesting when you go to gigs and then you next day you're looking at social media and you see people you know who've been to it, have pictures from different angles, So quite a few people I recognise were different parts of the place, and they had some better pictures than me, and but then they were all my age sort of people, but no, and they did exactly what you'd expect. Well, they didn't do. People Are People, actually. I thought they would have done that one.
Yeah. So how much of Memento Mori, their latest studio album featured then? Did we see much of that?
Four or five songs of that, which actually I listened to quite a bit and didn't recognize them. So, a couple of tracks in the first hour, it was kind of like album tracks that obviously people were keen on, and then they finished off with Personal Jesus, Just Can't Get Enough, etc. So yeah, absolutely fantastic set. He loves himself, he's great on stage. So, it's like a slightly less annoying Bono.
Yeah, you got
So,
much chatter from him.
no, there wasn't an awful lot. He did a lot of mincing around and wiggling his bum with the crowd, and they were going nuts. And the lady beside me said, "Oh," turned to her mate at one point and said, "For fuck's sake, he hasn't taken his shirt off." He's like, somewhere else he'd taken his shirt off. And the guy, is it Martin, the sort of guitarist?
Martin Gore.
Yeah, he was great. He sang a couple of songs sort of in the middle towards the end, and he was great. He's got a good voice. And that's it's funny when you watch them live, you think how much guitar they've got in their songs.
Yeah.
The drummer was fantastic. He had a real sort of double drum bass drum thing going, and again the sound was fantastic. And they did pretty much everything you'd expect, like so.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to go to that, but I really just it was kind of hitting a price point where I was thinking,
Close to it.
I don't really want to encourage bands to do that. I realize that in some cases they're putting on a big production, but they could play more nights. They could play more nights, which would cover the cost of the production rather than just, helicoptering in to the UK and playing, three or four gigs.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't think the production was that big. I mean, it was quite clever. They had a big M on the stage and some lights and stuff, but that was kind of it. And a little walkway at the front, which we couldn't really see. But there wasn't. I mean, 1975 had a set. I mean, it literally was like a film set, which they used a lot. The guy walked about and quite clever on their set, actually. They had windows at the back. And they opened the window, and of course, as soon as he opened the window, they had a camera guy around the other side, so it looked like he was looking out the back of the set. Very clever, but the special set was pretty. I mean, it wasn't basic, but I looked at tickets last year for their European tour, and it was a similar price. They're obviously minting it in, actually,
Yeah.
and their T-shirts and stuff and stuff were not cheap either. So.
Yeah. And speaking of minting it in, we've had an announcement finally after the most laborious kind of teaser campaign of all time that Akadaka are back. AC/DC are touring in the summer and they're not playing Glasgow yet, but I think they probably will add one, Terry.
I hope so. I mean, saying that, did they do Glasgow last time? I don't think they did, actually. They didn't do Scotland at all last time. And I saw somebody was posting about the gaps in their schedule because there's big gaps in between, but I think they might need the gaps in between to recover. Because there's like 3 nights between the London gigs. Okay, they may do another one. There's the Croke Park they're doing, and then loads two nights in Munich, I think.
Yeah, I think that they'll fill out a lot of those dates. I mean, it's obvious that there'll be big pent up demand to see them. Although I'm a bit worried about how much that one's going to cost as well. They used to be quite reasonably priced for their tours, but is it going to be expensive? And also, when is AC/DC no longer AC/DC? I mean, you've got Angus Young, and you've got Brian Johnson, but you're missing. For good or for bad, Phil Rudd, Cliff Williams, and obviously Malcolm, who's the biggest hole in the argument for going to see them, isn't he?
And they've got the bass player from Jane's Addiction is going to play with them, it said. So, no, people will, and I certainly will. I mean, I looked at Munich purely because it's on during the Euros, and if we go to Germany for the Euros, it might be fun to go there. I mean, this is the tour, I guess, that they didn't do for the album, isn't it? I think. So there's no new music, I don't think, unless they do an expanded album version or something, or just to get some cash in the door. But
Any excuse.
any excuse. On concert tickets, I noticed yesterday, and we both saw this tour in different locations. Somebody, my favorite Facebook page, Belfast Concert Ticket Shows 1980, had Def Leppard Pyromania.
Yeah.
Much was the ticket, you think? Because the guy posted the price.
I think it was about 5 or 6 quid, one or the other.
4.50. You might be in euros, maybe. Oh, he would have been euros then, actually.
No, it
No.
was punts. It was
One
punts.
month.
Yeah. Free State punts, Terry.
So I was 4.50. I thought, that's yeah, 4.50.
Yeah,
Imagine.
so you saw the first gig of that tour, didn't you? And I saw the second one, so
Yes. Now, someone posted that Tesla was a support. I don't remember them, the support act.
They didn't play in Dublin. I think it was Drive Shaft.
Yeah, I don't remember it was Tesla. And then my pal posted on this, I commented that, and that we'd gone together, and I'd forgotten this. We tried to go backstage to the Ulster Hall because you could often do that, and we couldn't get in. But he did jump in the car with Def Leppard or the band and got them signed his jacket, I think, or they signed something, and then they threw him out. I'd forgotten that. I did remember it, but because I tried to get in backstage, and of course, the guys were like, no chance there, sort of thing. Because they weren't a huge band then, were they? I guess.
No, I mean they were big internationally, obviously in the States because High and Dry had started to take off a bit and they'd been touring a lot there. But yeah, it was before the mania set in. You know, the Pyromania was the album that really broke them big.
Well, so speaking of Def Leppard, it's almost like I planned this. There's a link here. I was making a playlist this morning for anti-Valentine's Day songs.
All right.
I put Love Bites from Def Leppard on it. And I've got a few others, which we'll post up tomorrow probably. So what would be your best anti-Valentine song, Michael?
Well, you sent me a message about this earlier, and I replied in about 2 seconds flat because I think it's a good Joan Jett's I Hate Myself for Loving You.
Excellent track. That's on the list, by the way. So mine would be "Love Stinks" by the J. Geils Band. I'm sure there'll be loads of this, but I accidentally invented a new holiday at the weekend, and I had some Guinnesses. So we were talking about Valentine's Day, and for some reason Halloween was in my head, and it was Valoween came up.
Halloween.
I'm thinking like maybe. Can we do that, some sort of crossover? I can't think how you do that, but yeah, Lynn goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Oh, it's Valoween," and she goes, "No, it's Valentine's." Oh yeah, so it is. Yeah, so, but
It sounds like it's intended for goths or something like that. So,
oh yeah, of course, I'd love that sort of stuff. So, absolutely.
okay, let's move on and finish off with a couple of Irish acts who've released albums in the last couple of weeks. So let's start with New Dad's Madra. Terry, you know what a Madra is in Irish?
It's mother.
Nope. It's a dog.
Oh, it's a dog. I thought it was mother. Oh, there we go. All right. Okay.
Yeah, so tell us about Madra.
So New Dad are from Galway. This is kind of their. They seem to be the darlings on the radio at the minute. Radio One seems to be playing them to death, sort of thing. So they've released their first. They've had a few EPs out. There's the first album, Madra, and I've had a couple of listens to it, and it's pretty decent stuff, actually. I mean, it's fairly sort of shoegazy, kind of grungy sort of stuff. Nothing fantastically remarkable, but I have to say, I do enjoy it. I don't know if you've heard them at all, but
Yeah, I have heard it, listened to it a few times and really enjoyed it actually. It's not, you know, it's not something you would say you would be able to pigeonhole as being Irish in any way. It's just, you know, well put together songs, nicely arranged, and the lassie's got a good voice as well, so.
got a good, yeah, obviously a fairly well budgeted recording budget. It does sound pretty good, but I picked it up oddly second hand
Already? Well, okay.
on eBay, and a guy was selling it for 15 quid, and
Right.
oh, that can't be bad. So the reason I thought was mother was good. Obviously the cover's got like a porcelain doll which is kind of broken up, so I thought maybe Matt.
Yes.
Oh, okay, but oh, well, they're doing a tour. They're playing at St. Luke's, I think, in Glasgow.
Yes, yeah, I think they're going to be a fixture of the festival circuit during the summer as well. Okay. Let's move on to sprints.
Ah, no. So I'm sorry. I'm looking through about. I've got the albums beside me here. So the Sprints album is called "Letter to Self," and I can't remember where I've seen this band. I think maybe just on Hot Press or something. And I thought I'll just take a punt. And I bought the album from their store, and they call it sort of a garage rock band from Dublin, and they're absolutely fantastic. I would highly recommend them. They're playing at King Tut's. Unfortunately, it's already sold out in May. Fantastic album. The lassie's got a brilliant voice. Their songs just go 100 miles an hour. Loving it. Absolutely. Well, if you'd like that kind of stuff, you're absolutely great. I mean, compared to Green Day, for example, I played them back to back the other day, and it just blows the Green Day album away, actually. So,
Okay, interesting, right? Okay. Two others that you've been listening to, Conor White or Cruachan, as I would call him, White.
this is probably, of all that, I've got four here. This is probably the one that stands out the difference. So how do you say it?
Cruachan.
Here, okay. Cruachan White, so it's called Swirling Violets. It's a very dark sleeve, and I'd like to point out to them, Again, this is not good on a podcast, but printing blue lyrics on a black background in the inner sleeve is not good for if your eyes aren't great. So I could barely read on it. And the reason I saw him, I heard about him was there's a place called Boneyard Records in Omaha, which is a very small record shop, and he was doing an in-store. And I thought, oh, who's this guy? So I had a look at him, and very good. So it's very much in the vibe of a, I hate to say, an Ed Sheeran-y type, sort of fairly sort of light in the tunes, pretty easy on the ear, sort of heartbreaking sort of songs. There's one called 501, which is a really good single, really good song actually. It's fantastically well produced. He's from Armagh as well, Northern Ireland. And again, if you like that kind of stuff, I mean, I wouldn't say he's Lewis Capaldi. He's got a much gentler voice to him. I think it's not quite as harsh to listen to, but I'm loving it. Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, you're not sounding very well to me, but I mentioned Lewis Capaldi there. Problem patterns, Terry.
Hey, this one, okay, it's on Alco Pop Records, which made me laugh. I have no idea how this got to me, by the way. It turned up in the post. Yeah, out of the blue. It's called Blouse Club. They're a queer band of four girls from Belfast. It's punk music. It is punk. It's
Okay.
pretty loud. Some of it's pretty raw. I think I got it. It's produced and recorded in Belfast. I think I got it from putting on a list because there's some Stuart Bailey's got something to do with these guys, I think.
Okay, right.
They supported Ash when they did the independent venue week, and then this turned up in my house, which was great. So some of the songs are my favorite one is Lesbo 3000, Pity Bra, Domestic Bliss, Poverty Tourist, History of Bad Men Part Two. You see where I'm going with this, but actually, if you like sort of punk and fairly loud and raw, it's absolutely worth a listen to. Like, it's pretty short. I mean, yeah, it's less shorter than an episode of EastEnders, and definitely worth a listen to. Loud.
Okay, like the sound of that one. So yeah, my listening for this week will be sprints and problem patterns. And thank you very much for that. Okay, Terry, just going to wrap up. But you were keen to mention the Glasgow Film Festival, which you attended the launch of recently.
I did. That was good. I mean, yeah. I mean, I have not done that sort of thing before, so I tagged along to the launch of that. I do like the films. Went in, never sort of been to like that before. Very interesting. Very friendly people. Very helpful with stuff. Met a few, pucker journalists there who are going to be sort of covering events. They've got quite a few premieres coming up. I think one of the best ones actually for me looks like Janie, which is the Janie Godley sort of story of her last tour. I've actually got a copy of that to watch now, so I'm hoping to watch that maybe and try and review it next episode. They've got Viggo Mortensen's going to turn up for his new Western, which I've just forgotten the title of. I think it's called Dead Men something or other. And Kirsten Stewart is opening it off with a film called Love Lies Bleeding. So fantastic selection. It's just a shame it's in Glasgow, and it made me miss the Belmont even more because some of these films
Yeah.
would show up here.
Are most of these movies going to be shown at the Cineplexes rather than the Glasgow Film Theatre kind of venue?
No, I think they're all in GFT1. There's a few they do farm, or the GFT, they do farm out some to Cineworld, I think. I think they do the premieres there. It was interesting, and I never thought of this before. There's loads of films. They've got loads of films from the Czech Republic and loads of sort of art house type movies. And I was asking one of the girls afterwards, I said, would it be fair to say that some of these films will never see the light of day outside film festivals? Because they get shown at a film festival in Glasgow or let's say Toronto or wherever, and then they never make it to the, they don't get picked up for release, and then they end up on some sort of, niche
Film
stream.
four.
Film four, yeah, exactly, or rental services, and that's it. What happens? They just don't get, and maybe the next film will get picked up or sort of thing. So it's quite a hard slog for these people to kind of make any money out of it. So,
Absolutely, yeah.
of
And
course.
I think probably they got a good caliber of guests this year. If they got Viggo Mortensen and Kirsten Stewart. I guess they've probably been helped to a certain extent by the collapse of the Edinburgh Film Festival because, both it and the Film House are no more in
Well,
Edinburgh, so
I asked about the film house, and they thought there would be something happening there this year. I don't know.
eventually, yeah. But I mean, it's been well over a year. It's been mothballed now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean it's funny because all the people I talked to, all the organizers, who had all they all knew the Belmont and they all had been there for various things, and you kept I kept thinking of all these films they were showing, and there's some certainly interesting ones. And one thing I wasn't sure how this would work would be how do you, it's just like how naive I was. How do you review all these films? Because I thought they send you discs. Of course, they don't send you discs anymore. They send you links to watch them online, sort of thing. Although I'm going to go down again at the end of Glasgow, end of February, to watch a couple of the premieres in the film theatre because I thought it's better to see it on the big screen. But so I'll work my way through them and review them all in due course, and we'll see how they go. So.
Good. Yeah, great. Can't wait to hear about that in a couple of weeks. So that's it for this episode. Have a very happy Valentine's Day. Don't eat too many chocolates, Terry.
I know, but I'll tell you what's weird. I saw someone at the weekend saying, "Why do they always associate Valentine's Day with steak?" Because when you go to Marks and Spencer's or Sainsbury's, they've always got steak. It's always the thing they have, and it's like, why is that? I wonder. Anyway, no idea what we'll do, but I'll go buy a bottle of wine. And it's a Wednesday night. Lynn's working the next day, unfortunately, but I'm sure we'll have something.
Great. Okay, that's us for this episode. Till the next time, Terry.